And we are back. Thank you for joining us for another edition of the Daily Dots. And as always, joined by the Brain Trust, Mr. Chase Taylor. And today is not a day where there's nothing to talk about.
That's an understatement, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just going to give you a warning. If you're one of those people that believes that we're not worth your time unless we stick to our 15 to 20 minute mandate, which we seldom ever come in at. But I have a feeling like this one could run a little long. So just up front, that's the warning. But before we get into analysis, Chase, why don't you give us a breakdown? I would say give us a breakdown of the day, but there were like three trading days crammed into one. Give us the typical overview breakdown of the indexes, rates, all the noteworthy stuff.
So I'll do the markets and then I'll do data quick. And then I'm sure we'll spend a lot of time on the Fed, but so the market, S&P down 0.34 on the day, and this is after being down, then up 1% and then closing it down 0.34. The Q's down 0.7. Same thing, was up over 1% at one point. Small caps up 0.2. They were all over the place today. Equal weight down 0.3. Mag 7 essentially flat on the day. 2-year yield down about 8 basis points. And then you get out to the long end and it was closer to like only down 3. That's after being down a lot intraday. So that was also a fun ride. Now, oil, which is completely getting overlooked because of all the monetary policy stuff today, but oil down about 3.5% today, getting very close to its uptrend line. So that's getting nasty as people expect happy times in the Middle East, and we had a monster build here in the U.S. Gold up about 0.9%. Going to individual names, NVIDIA and just semiconductor stocks in general got whacked today. NVIDIA down about 4%. SMCI down 14%. So those were some kind of noteworthy moves. And then on the inflation, or not inflation, sorry, the data side, we had a lot of that. So ADP came in a little better than expected and was strong on the job openings for construction, which obviously I always talk about. JOLTS was weak. That came in below expectations for job openings. And notably there, they had job openings for construction just absolutely crash. So weird data. Construction spending today was lower than expected. So at least data is maybe starting to bifurcate a little bit on the construction side. ISM, very confusing.
Hold on. Yeah. When I see that, that makes perfect sense to me when I look at rates. Like, we've seen this happen every single time. When the 30-year gets up to 7.5 or above, everything seems to just come to a, I wouldn't say a grinding halt. That's a bit hyperbolic, but it seems to leap, you know, put a dent in the tape anyway, right? Do you think that's just as simple as, yeah, right? Rates start climbing again, and job openings are going to dry up.
I don't think job openings data is worth the paper they print it on or the spreadsheet gigabytes they use for it. But you know, it was a big move, so I'm not going to overlook it. I'll pay close attention next month to see like if they're like, oh, just kidding, like, we revised that, our bad, or if it's real. But like to have ADP come in and be like, woo, like construction jobs are still balling, and then the same day that JOLTS are like, no, they're not. It's just weird. But construction spending was slightly negative, and it was flat last month, revised up to negative to flat last month. So maybe you're at least peaking there. And if you're peaking in construction spending, it would make sense to have job openings slowed. Like, well, we don't need to hire any people here. So I'm open-minded to all of it there. ISM notably came in a little weaker than expected and back into contraction under 50. But prices paid was red hot at 60.9. And employment kind of perked up. Employment for ISM looks like it could break out soon. So weird ISM. And my favorite metric to look in there is new orders minus inventories. It leads the broader PMI, like the broader ISM. And that it's still positive, but it's weakened to like barely positive. So that kind of tells you like, manufacturing is okay, but it's not going to get real hot anytime soon, it looks like. And then we had the Fed. So I'm sure we'll get into that.
You know, And this is not a prog. This is a knee jerk call after you're ripping through that data. So nobody read into this at all. But you know what that sounds like? It sounds to me like the leg reaper is starting to creep around. If you dropped me into this economy and I didn't know about what was happening over the previous 2 years, you read some of that stuff to me and it goes, huh, that sounds kind of like the beginning of a bit of a slowdown.
Problem is, you still have there's still no hard data suggesting any problems at
right.
all. You just still have soft data. And I feel like Jerome Powell today was me 9 months ago, just looking at the soft data and be like, oh, this bad boy's about to break. We're scared. You know what I mean? Like, cool, but the hard data is still fine. And at this point, after the last 2-3 years of weak soft data and strong hard data, like clearly one of those is signal and one of those is noise for 3 years in a row. Like, I don't know, maybe it's time to pay a lot of attention to the hard data.
Yeah, well, I don't know what they're paying attention to. So getting into the real meat of the conversation today, I would say per usual, you seem to have taken this a bit more in stride than I have. But I'll be honest with you. I don't want to be hyperbolic. This is the most, the word confusing comes to mind. This is the most perplexing. And I think it's the most unnerving and hard to explain Fed meeting that I've ever witnessed. And what I mean by that, now, you're the one that listened to it. I was on calls and things like that, so I'm relying on your feedback. And if I misspeak, then, you know, correct.
It's on me.
Yeah. No, just correct me in real time because I'm, you know, we haven't even had really a time for you and I to debrief since markets closed.
Yeah.
But you're looking at all of this data, and it is all saying inflation is reaccelerating, and several data points are saying that it's not reaccelerating in a modest way. Right, like some right. serious upticks in inflation, even historically speaking. And then for he sure. comes out today, and the way I was explaining monetary policy on an early interview is it's very much carrot and stick type scenario, right? The carrot being the rate cuts, the stick being the rate hikes. Sometimes those things can invert, but I think that's kind of a simple way to understand it. And the Fed has talked many times about how jawboning, I don't think they use the term jawboning, but you know, how that's, if they can get the market to do what they, you know, what they want it to do, or the economy to do what they want it to do via talking, as opposed to acting, they'll do that.
Yes.
In light of that, looking at the game you are currently looking at inflation reaccelerating, looking at the mistakes they've already made in the cycle, declaring inflation dead before it was. Powell effectively took a hike off the table today, period.
He went really far up his way to do that.
I, for the life of me, and set what you think aside, what you think about what's going on in the economy, just set it aside for a second. Why would you do that? That makes zero sense. The only thing, and I don't even want to say this because it sounds like you're, you know, an Alex Jones conspiracy theorist sitting there talking about the evil Fed. The only thing I can think of why they would do that is political. It makes no sense. It shrinks their own flexibility going forward. And if he does again, this would be the third time. Because, right, basically, it was inflation was transitory. We all know what a laughing joke that was. But he effectively doubled down on that 4 weeks ago, just as we started getting data saying that it wasn't transitory, that it's coming back. Why would he shrink his toolbox in this environment? Like I was joking on
especially
this other
whenever
interview, and I go, he didn't get rid of the stick. Go ahead.
Especially whenever you have a free, it's like a free option to just be like, yeah, we might hike, you know, like that doesn't cost you anything. Cause I had a student here with me kind of shadowing the day. And what I told him is like, the way you think of this is like in the meeting, you say like, hey guys, like we're not hiking. Like that would be silly.
But I'm going to go out there and make it sound like we might to help us reach our goals here. This is like a free option. Like why not play it? Just like if you're buying a lottery ticket, they'd be like, hey, you want four for free? And you're like, no, thank you. Like it just didn't make sense.
Yeah. It handcuffs them. And then if he does need to hike again, right? You want to talk about once you've said the stick is gone and then you bring it back out, right? Like you want to talk about roiling markets. I just, Chase, help me understand it, man. Like I said,
all right. So I will play devil's advocate.
Okay.
So yeah, we got a little delay there. Sorry. I will play devil's advocate, but like, I can't really put my heart into this one. I think he, no kidding, thinks like they got this thing whipped and this 3 months was just kind of like nonsense. He went out of his way to say, hey, you know, after 1 or 2 months, like we were going to look through that. We just thought it was like, you know, little blips in certain parts of the data. But after three, he's like, that's signal. And he's like, and we took it as signal. And I'm like, well, it's not sounding like it. And he said, the signal is we just got to like, we have to wait a little longer. And I'm like, no, that's not the signal. But
inflation's accelerating.
Yeah. So let me get to that point, because he refused to like characterize it that way. Not only did he refuse to characterize it that way, but he went out of his way to reframe everything as year over year over the last year. And I want to highlight this, because we've talked about how much they have changed. They've shifted and moved the goalpost, right? So if you go back about 6 months, actually go back 9 months, they're showing you year over year. And then 3 month and 6 month annualized started looking great. So then they were like, hey, look, 3 month annualized is so low. This is wonderful. We can pivot. 6 month annualized is under two, guys. Now, 3 month and 6 month annualized all of a sudden are reaccelerating. Full stop. Like, that's not a debate. So now he's saying, hey, look at year over year, baby. This is still fine. Like, we're good. Like, inflation was super high a year ago. Now it's fine. But I'll give you the numbers real quick.
Let me interject real quick, though.
Sure.
What's really interesting about that is if now we're looking at for year over year, that gets him clearance past the election.
No, it won't, though, because the base effects the last few months have been very helpful for this. They are going to they're going to get unhelpful. June, July, August. So this is why he really stepped in it by highlighting year over year. So now he has to hope 3 month annualized and 6 month annualized get better real fast, because if not, 3 month, 6 month annualized look bad, and year over year is going to look bad for no other reason than the base effects. Now, oil doing what it's doing this last week or two, that might bail him out, like, because gas prices would be a big part of getting year over year up. So maybe he gets lucky on that one, and maybe housing inflation can start ticking down enough to like bail him out on the year over year. But if a lot of stuff stays equal and gas prices can be moving higher, if oil can get off the ground here, then year over year is going to look really bad too. Like you can, you're like 3% right now. That could go back to 3.5, 4 and make the year over year argument just go kaput too. But 3 month annualized back when they were touting it for Supercore, it was just over 2. Now it's over 5. Median was 3.7. Now it's over 5. And core PCE, which is the most important, was 1.5. Now it's 4.4. So you're absolutely reaccelerated inflation in the first quarter, like full stop. And again, they were hammering 3 month, 6 month annualized whenever they look good. Now they're ignoring them and saying, but look at year over year. And I argued with Nick Tamareos on Twitter on this, I don't know, 4 or 5 months ago. I'm like they, because they lost the ability, I think they've just lost the ability to point to 3 month and 6 month. And that was like what they were hinging their whole case on. Well, now they're not even trying to go there. They're just talking year over year again, because that's the only one that looks good. And the student we had in today, I told him one of the signals that he would be very dovish is if he points to falling job openings today, because it is basically the single data point that has been good for the last month. So if he points to it, he is cherry picking the one thing. And he did. He highlighted it in the press conference. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Like the
well,
one
not
piece
only
of data.
That, but he knows what you and I know, which is put JOLTS right up there with one of the most worthless metrics there is. I have watched JOLTS be more wrong way more often than it's right.
Right.
Like in terms of which direction it's going to. I've seen markets freak out over jolts before, and 2 weeks later, it was all nonsense, right? So what I'm saying, Powell knows that. Powell knows that. The question I've got is why, and I can't come up with an answer for that. This FOMC, I've had FOMC meetings where I completely disagreed with them, where I went on a rant. This one, if you don't, and I'm not going to the political thing because that's what I want. I don't want that. It scares the heck out of me if that's the case. Maybe if I think about it long enough, we'll come up with something else to point to. I just can't wrap my head around why he would take that posture in the face of this data if there isn't a political motivation. It's just the only I don't want to use the word lying, but he was BSing. Yeah. I mean, that was just BS. And
it's really disingenuous.
It was very disingenuous. And usually I've heard them be disingenuous before, but you could understand why. Right, you could kind of read through the tea leaves and go, look, I see, I just can't get there unless there's political cover. This seems to me, this would be the Fed meeting that I would expect to hear if I knew all of the FOMC read that Wall Street Journal article about Trump on Monday.
Yeah. And the crazy thing to me is the rest of the committee has really turned. Like the rest of the committee's kind of turned and gotten hawkish, and here he is, like, didn't even come close. Because I thought he might be hawkish, just like, well, the rest of the committee's kind of moved it up here, so maybe he will. And then it's like, maybe he at some point acknowledges the fact that the neutral rate's moving higher. Maybe they tried to get him on that. They tried to get him on, well, financial conditions eased a lot. Maybe that had something to do with this inflation picking back up. And he's like, nah. So he's still completely not paying attention to financial conditions and the role that's playing, which is why he was dead wrong on Q1 growth and inflation again. So all the lessons you would hope the institution and him as the leader of it would have learned.
Chase. This is where I jump back in there and say, I don't think these people are that stupid. I look at this as I kind of think the Occam's razor. And again, you know what I mean when I say this. I hate going to the conspiratorial Fed argument for a whole lot of reasons. A, I think it's where logic and honest debate end on the topic. But B, also, it makes you look like a bit of a troglodyte in the financial circles, right? I feel like it's always the guy screaming about the crooked Fed. It's the same guy that was screaming for years about the bullion banks, right? Manipulating. Now, they actually did manipulate the price of metals, but you know what I'm saying? Like, this is not... For me to sit there and allege that they're politically driven, it's not exactly a position that makes you look more erudite or informed. You know what I mean? It's kind of seen as sophomoric. But just applying the Occam's razor explanation to this, why you would take a hike off, even the threat of a hike would help you contain inflation. That is inexplainable to me, unless you look at it through the lens of politics. Right. What do you think? I'm going off. What do you think?
So as far as the political angle goes, if he cared enough about that, why not just, actually go out and cut or something, like, or just completely in QT? Like if he cared enough about that, like, I feel like he would do more. Like what I've said in the past is like, do I think all else equal, if he can do a little bit without, hurting himself, would he do it? Yeah, I think so. But the thing is, he's been really consistent on a lot of his views, like not caring about financial conditions, not thinking the neutral rate is higher or matters. Like, it's not like those are new. Now, the cherry picking and goalposts moving on which data they're looking at, like, that makes it look bad, but even then, I think you could argue that he's been doing that for 3 years. Like, I think they clearly kind of have more of an end in mind and they just chase it with, the data of the quarter that supports the end in mind. I think he wants nothing to do with hiking for other reasons, but like, to me, it's like, it's not that he, he won't hike because of the election. I think he won't hike because he knows it might blow up chunks of the banking system.
And I agree with him, but I think keeping the threat of a hike there lessens your need to eventually hike. That's the part that I don't get. I don't disagree at all with their decision to stay pat. I think that that makes sense. If I would have been in his shoes, I wouldn't have changed either. Right.
But to be fair, like we added 4 basis points on the day to what the market thinks the rate will be at the end of the year. So like, it's not, I don't know. Like, I don't think markets really cared that he, you know, said that at the end of the day. So if he came out and said, we might have to hike. And if he didn't push back on it so hard, like maybe you would have taken out 20 basis points or something like that. Like, I don't think that would have been that big of a difference.
No. Intraday.
But I still think he should have done it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, like I said, the part that I am having a really hard time wrapping my brain, I can understand all of it. The part that I'm having such a hard time wrapping my head around is why you take it off the table. That makes no sense.
It would be really embarrassing.
What's that?
Maybe it's just simple as like, it would be really embarrassing to go from, hey, we're probably going to cut 3 times this year to like, oh, maybe we'll hike. I think the whiplash of that would just make them look kind of like clowns that they have no idea what's going on. And they're just like chasing the market around, whichever way it goes. Like, I think you could make that argument.
That's an interesting take. I hadn't thought about it from that angle. I look at it completely from the other side. This board is so freaking complex and there are so many moving parts. I would expect them to come out and say something. Hey, look, there's a lot going on here. We're going to keep every option available to us, right? Like, why remove that? To me is just mind boggling when you look at the underlying data. Like, you were already historically wrong on your transitory call. And now you're saying no more hikes as these numbers are accelerating.
Which is the same thing as saying Q1 was transitory. It really is.
It's you're doing.
And hey, maybe it was, but
script. And what's even now, this is classic Fed. This is nothing new. But with each time they get, he was just dead wrong 4 weeks ago. Right? Just 4 weeks ago, he was dead wrong. And with each error, with each turn, every time they get it wrong, you don't see any change in the approach. You don't see any humility. There's no second guessing of the way they're looking at things. My disc is still skipping here. I'm just sitting. I just cannot for the life of me understand why you would take that position. I think it's a historic position. I think it's one that probably won't get the press it deserves, but this will go down in the books. Like, I have never wanted to ask questions directly to Jay Powell more so than today, to sit there and go, Jay, you got to walk me through this. I'm trying to make the assumption that you guys are operating with the best intentions, but I just don't get this. How does it strengthen his hand or his capability or his maneuverability? How does saying we're not going to hike, how does that help him in any way? I just don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it doesn't. But I have a view of what financial conditions do to inflation in the economy that he does not share. So, I mean, it might just be that simple.
And then that begs the question. I don't really know how you can be observing this setup, this economy, and this stock market, and not have come to that conclusion. I mean, it is so lockstep. It is so obvious for anybody that's looking. And it's why, mostly due to your work, why our prognostications about inflation in the first half of this year were dead on the money. Dead on the money. Like, we couldn't have been more right. And I'm not saying that, again, just for those of you that are new, I'm not saying that sitting here going, hey, oh, look at how smart we are. We're smarter than the Fed. I'm saying it because if you're looking at the right stuff, it's pretty obvious. And yet, here they are, you're out there chasing their tails. And I'm to the point where I don't think it's chill. I don't think they're that stupid. That was
like his broadest point was like, if we just give it enough time at this level, like it'll be enough. Like 5.5, given the time, is going to make everything okay. And I think that is
based
true.
Based on what? But based on, I mean, what? Well, again, they're supposed to be data
dependent. Maturity
walls
that have to refi into it.
Yeah, but they're supposed to be data dependent. It's accelerating.
Yeah, the funny thing is they missed the disinflation. They missed the inflation, then they missed the disinflation. Now they're missing the inflation again. Like and maybe that's it. Maybe he doesn't want to extrapolate the last 3 months, because every time they extrapolate, they're wrong. So maybe he's like, you know what? Let's just let this one play out a little longer, because the last few times we extrapolated, we were dead wrong. So like, I want to see 6 months.
Hey, but that would
if
make
he takes that attitude,
me,
he'll get
that's
it.
That's not. That would make sense to me too, but that's not what he did. What he did was say, we are certain this reacceleration is transitory and we're taking hikes off the table. That's crazy to me.
Maybe he'll be able to put them on in June.
They're going to have to upgrade their growth and their inflation and probably their neutral rate. All three of those will get an upgrade come the June economic projections, which tells you a lot. From March to June, they have to say, oop, growth's higher than we thought. Oop, inflation's higher than we thought. Oop, neutral rate's higher than we thought. It's like, that should probably come with a little more than, eventually this will be good enough.
So before I go ranting any further on this and asking you a bunch of questions you can't answer because you're not in the FOMC, what else was said? Was there what other? I'm sure you picked out other things in the meeting or the minutes that you found interesting.
So the only hat tips they kind of gave to that made sense were they did go out of their way to say, look, there's a lack of further progress towards the 2% goal. Like, they made it clear, like, all right, Q1 we didn't make any progress. As I explained, like, they hammered at over the last year, over time, those kinds of things. He said they're still highly attentive to inflation risks, although that clearly is not the case. So this was a big takeaway for me. This one really bothered me. It was that he said that they're more focused on employment now. Making it clear, like, he made it sound like, oh, we got inflation whipped, so like now we're starting to pay more close attention to employment, as if, you know, with two sides of our mandate, sometimes one gets more attention. Well, now we can give more attention to the employment side because the inflation side's coming back. And I'm just like, what are you talking about? Like,
that was crazy. 4%, you're a sub 4% unemployment. What is he talking about? You're going to focus on the thing that is in nirvana, and you're going to completely ignore the thing that could screw it all up? Exactly.
He said because 12-month inflation was under 3%. Like, he went out of his way to say that. So I'm just like, cool. Now you just messed yourself up, because 2 months from now it would be over 3% probably, and you're going to, and then somebody's going to be like, well, it's over 3 now. Do you care more about the inflation side? He's gonna be like, well, look at 3-month annualized. You know, he'll play some more games probably.
The other thing that's interesting to me about these comments is, usually when you hear other Fed governors talk or FOMC members talk leading into a decision or leading into a Fed meeting like this, it's almost always the way they talk is almost always a prelude, right, to the minutes themselves, meaning somebody might be a little bit more on the hawkish side of what's going to be said. Somebody might emphasize something a little more dovish, but they usually correspond to what the message is. That is not the case this time. Like you said, multiple members made very, very concrete statements regarding being concerned about inflation. And then Powell strolls out there and completely ignores all of it. What's that telling us?
That's what really stood out to me the most. And that was So I was nervous because everyone kind of had this, like, ooh, he's going to be hawkish tone, because I thought he'd be hawkish. So the fact that everyone agreed made me feel nervous. But that was the thing I kept coming back to. I was like, well, I mean, everyone else has, like, kind of gotten more hawkish. It would be weird if he didn't. Well, sure enough, he didn't. I would love to answer that if I could, but I can't. I maybe he's convinced to like just give it one more like spin here, and we're gonna, you know, the next one will be good. And he went out of his way to talk about housing inflation, that he like really thinks that's gonna come down, like clearly putting a lot of trust in that, which Goolsbee did in Q1, and that's like why Goolsbee had to go completely flip-flop, because it didn't materialize. And I mean, sure, like you might get OER down or whatever, but I don't know, like we talked about yesterday, you just had one of the biggest month over month home price increases in history. Like is that really where you want to hang your hat right now? Home prices growing at 7%, rent's still positive, like pretty decently. Like I don't, even if you're right that it, the measured stuff comes through lower, like people are still gonna look out the window and go, okay, cool, like I'm trying to buy a house and they keep going up and I can't buy a house. So like, I don't know. So it was a weird thing to hang his hat on. I thought that one made a lot more sense 6-9 months ago. Back then I was parroting it, you know, 9 months ago. It was like a reason to believe in disinflation. But I thought the bust in like apartments and rents was going to be a lot bigger by now. And it just hasn't materialized. So like, I think that makes sense once you see it materialize, but not right now.
All right. So a couple little technical difficulties here, but hopefully we've got them ironed out. So getting back to the housing data, I was telling you, I was doing that other interview and this subject came up. It was the housing data. I couldn't recall whether it was housing data or Supercore that came in at the hottest level that we'd seen since biggest month over month gain, right? That we'd seen since 1990. Put yeah. into context, housing, and you may not have this available to you. How big of an acceleration is that for Supercore over that same period of time? Because to me, you say that out loud, and that's a big jump to me. It's what it sounds like. Try to put some context around that Supercore number. And just so the people know, when we're talking about Supercore inflation, what does that entail again, Chase? Walk me through the components of that. Not all of them, but what makes it different from the other ones?
Yeah. So essentially, you're stripping out food, energy, and housing. So the idea obviously being like, get the volatile stuff out there. And we all know housing is like awkwardly lags, like massively lags reality. So like, let's just get that out and look at Supercore. That was the Fed's argument. It was like, this gives us a better idea of like where real inflation is right now, like the inflation they can control. So they started pointing to it a lot like a year ago. But yeah, now it's a problem. So I will put this into context. If you go back to pre-pandemic, you were usually right around 2, which, hey, no surprise, right? And then whenever you, and this is 3-month annualized, remember, 2021, 2022, when things got crazy, 3-month annualized was typically from 4, kind of a, or excuse me, from 5 to 6. So it was in the 5 to 6 range. Well, right now you're at 5.49. So as far as 3-month annualized Supercore goes, it's essentially right where it was whenever inflation was between, you know, call it 4-9. So the Fed's very happy with themselves. Inflation's under 3, but 3-month annualized Supercore is like, cool. Like we're basically still doing what we were doing when we were at the highs. So either you think Supercore doesn't matter. I had a couple of just crazy readings in it that, you know, made it nuts. And a lot of it lately has been like stuff like car insurance. And so Goldman Sachs has gone out of their way lately to be like, look, yeah, like inflation was super high in the first quarter, but it's all really lagging stuff and it's a lot of catch-up inflation. So they would say like, well, you know, car prices got expensive, so then car insurance had to catch up, which isn't wrong, but like, okay, well then what, where were you, why didn't you call? If it's so easy, why didn't you call for that? Why didn't you say, hey guys, inflation is going to be way higher than the Fed thinks in Q1? They didn't. They were like, hey, the Fed's going to cut in March. Well, here we are, it's May, they can't cut in Q2 and probably can't cut in Q3. And instead of them owning that and being like, well, we're wrong, inflation's higher than we thought, they're just like, ah, it's just some lagging catch up inflation, it's fine. And I think the Fed is basically taking on the same viewpoint, you know, as Goldman there. And Goldman's like been super itchy trigger finger, like they're gonna start cutting in March, they're gonna cut 6 times, and it was like, well, okay, fine, they're gonna start in May. Well, like, okay, fine, they're gonna start in June. Like they refuse to take to like back away, take a more holistic view of this, the same way obviously the Fed does.
Yeah, to me, this is just Powell seems like historically, the other confusing thing about this is he seems like a fairly historically astute guy I'll be completely transparent on this. I'm not sure that this is based on my own observations or if I've listened to other people say this enough. But you know, cause I've obviously never sat down and had a beer with the guy, so I don't know, but it seems like a guy that is very concerned about his legacy. Man, if you were opening the door to be a disaster at Fed head, he just did. You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, he can always still, you know, come correct in the next meeting or whatever, but like you're right though. I mean, some of this stuff is feedback loops. So you open the door to some stuff that's not easy to put back in the bottle. The history is pretty good at teaching you that inflation is one of those things that's not easy to get back in the bottle. So being judicious with it makes sense. And if you go back to the 2 years ago, like the Jackson Hole, like there's gonna be pain. Like that was a guy that was like not playing around with inflation. So it's weird. It is kind of weird to see that Powell just completely vanish in the new guy that's like, whatever, like just give it enough time and it'll all be fine. It's right back to transitory without using the word. I think that the Fed and Goldman position as Q1 inflation was basically transitory. They're not going to say that word because that made them look stupid, but that is the position they're taking. And hey, like I say, maybe it is, but
here's the funny thing about it. I think one of the most compelling things about it, and I think it always made sense the way the Fed used 3-month averages, right? I think that makes sense because I think when you're looking at inflation, you don't want to overreact to 1-month print, right? But being that inflation itself is by definition a rate of change, due to that fact, I think that it's one of those metrics where the 3-month trend is of the utmost importance, right? Like, I mean, inflation itself is a rate of change calculation, right? So because of that, I think that, it seems pretty simple to me, but it's a rate of change itself. So the rate of change of that rate of change, which is going to be captured by the 3-month average, seems pretty weighty. I mean, that's to just brush that off. And furthermore, how do you just brush it off when 4 weeks ago you were using 9-month averages to justify a cut? And now we're saying the 3-month component, third of the metric you were just citing now doesn't matter? I mean, you know, like...
Well, so 6 months is what they were really hammering
at. Okay, but what I'm saying is if you pull this up on a chart just via technical analysis, inflation's breaking out. I mean...
That's just not up for debate.
It broke the downtrend line, man. It is breaking out.
And...
Right? I mean...
You can play the... Here's why I think it's, you could play the like, oh yeah, but it's going to be transitory for X reasons card. You can, but like, it's not really up for debate whether or not it's happening. So another metric I like to look at is the Atlanta Fed sticky CPI. So the point of it is to not look at stuff that gets all volatile and moves around. It's like, no kidding. It's like, it's the stuff that is stickier, right? And it's very well put together. It's very thoughtfully put together. If you look at the 3-month annualized rate of Atlanta Fed sticky, that first of all, it didn't go to 9 like the other stuff. It went to 7.5 because it's only the sticky stuff. You got all the way down to 3.6. Again, like that's like summer of 2023. Well, now you're back up to 5.2. So it's not just, I know they everyone wants to play, they're like, oh, it's just this catch up in inflation. So, well, okay, but sticky is telling me that we're going from under 4 to over 5. So there's so many different metrics you can pull up that are showing.
Yeah, I mean, a few bip increase here or there, I get it. Okay. But that increase equates to what? A quick math. What was our starting point? What was the low point on it you said last year on the sticky?
Yeah. Last summer you were at 3.6. You went 3.6 to 5.2.
Which is like a 75% increase. somewhere along those lines.
Right. So, and even at that 3-6 level, between 2007 and 2019, you never hit that level. So even that low, you never touched for the last decade. So if, at 5'2", like I'll pull it up. So for 5'2", you got to go back to guess who? 1991 to even get to a 5.2 reading on 3-month annualized sticky. And that's now, that's annualized in the last 3 months. So all this COVID stuff, it's all like, no, it's all gone. We're just talking the last 3 months. So it's just really difficult to frame that as like, oh, it's fine. Like, it's just give it a minute. Like, no, like the last 3 months were shockingly inflationary given a 30-year backdrop. And they're treating it like it's not that at all. Like, oh yeah, but over the last year, everything's
fine.
They're
treating it like it's up like 15% or something off the bottom, right? They're treating it, I'll keep going back to charts. They're treating it as if it's like retraced and it's bumping up against its downtrend line. It's not. It's exploded through it. Okay, so let's move on and summarize this, because at the end of the day,
sure,
it really only matters what markets can glean from this. And as I sat back and digested this information as you were feeding it to me, and I haven't, just full disclaimer, I haven't had a chance to fully digest it because I've just gone from one meeting / interview to another here. But if sitting back and digesting it, I can sort of see, actually thinking about it now, the market moves today make a lot of sense. At first glance, I heard he's taking the hike off the table, and I went, oh, you've got to be kidding me. This market's going to go berserk. Then as I thought about it, if we treat the Fed the way that we treat them, which is the shaman of the economy and they know everything, I could actually see markets getting roiled by that, and I'll explain why. He said he's not going to hike. He also simultaneously admitted that he couldn't cut. I didn't say it, but he can't, right?
Right.
In addition to that, if you don't believe it's a political thing from the Fed, you must be left to infer that he sees underlying weakness in the economy, right? Like, so bottom line, I'm sitting here, I feel like I could take that FOMC meeting and make a pretty, pretty fairly high conviction argument to the fact that I think this is going to be bullish for the market, or it's going to be bearish. I'm pretty confused at this point. What is your read?
Yeah. So, I mean, all else equal, you would think, yeah, this should be great for the market because, I mean, we didn't even talk about the taper, but they're tapering QT. And on top of that, like, he clearly is not, in, you know, he's not going to hike. And he thinks, you know, inflation's basically whipped already. Like, it's not a big deal. To me, the market should, and that's, there's a, you know, that should's doing a lot of work whenever you use it when it comes to markets, right? What I think the market should do is, if I, like, think about the long bond, right? If the Fed doesn't really care to stop inflation, like, why in the world would yields not be much higher on the long bond? To me, the ultimate thing I'm paying attention to as a long bond investor is the Fed going to make sure that inflation doesn't go anywhere? You know, this step one. If their answer is yes, then fine. I'm happy to do long bonds if I think inflation is going to weaken or the growth is going to weaken or whatever. But when the Fed's backdrop is like, sure, like inflation's reaccelerating, but we don't care. It's still fine.
Here's the other question I've got for you.
That should be bad for asset prices. And one thing real quick too, what people are missing on the taper side is that it makes it harder for money to come all the way out of the reverse repo facility. And that, you know, that's kind of like liquidity I think the market's counting on, was getting all that money out of there. But if they're going to do things this way, like there's going to be a lot of bills that people can buy instead of having to put their money in reverse repo. I don't know. Like, it just, if reverse repo is going to stick, you know, above 100, 200 billion and not go to zero, that's liquidity that you thought you were getting that you're not getting. If the budget deficit keeps moving higher, that's liquidity that you're not getting that you thought you were getting. Like, So the market still has a liquidity problem until the Fed does something to solve it. Now, obviously, tapering does help some, but the way I view it is liquidity. You still have a liquidity problem. You still have an inflation problem. You still have an economy's too hot problem. So until one of those breaks, like at least on the bond yield side, like I don't see why this should go down. Now, we have jobs Friday, right? That could change everything in either direction. Like it can make Powell look like a total fool if it comes in hot. But if it comes in weak, like then everything we're talking about here, you can kind of be like, well, maybe jobs are starting to break here and that changes everything. And it would.
I'm already hearing signs, and again, could be 100% wrong on my part, but I'm already hearing signs. I've already actually received a few text messages from some colleagues and also from some clients regarding, okay, the Fed's not going to raise rates. Is it time to buy duration? My initial reaction to this was the exact opposite, right? It was the exact opposite. Because I'm sitting there going, okay, let's play that out. If the market starts buying duration and the long end of the curve starts dropping with this backdrop, inflation's going to rip.
Yeah, then you're right back to way too hot everything. I mean, and that's not good for the long bond if things are hot.
And then you'll have to unbreak that stick, right? Like, I mean, The other frustrating thing about it, Chase, and I keep bringing this up, but it's just so frustrating to see them in the exact same position that we were concerned that they would be in a year and a half ago, right? We're just these guys, their visibility is 6 inches in front of their face. I just don't know how they didn't see this conundrum coming, right? Because this is where he's at.
Yeah, or at least understand it now. Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. I just have a hard time believing he doesn't understand. And especially as you read more of those minutes, like I said, there's several things in there that are just complete BS. Like you said, they're disingenuous. They're BS. You can't paint them any way different than that. You know, I just don't think that there's any room to interpret them any other way. Just he's saying things that you know he doesn't really think. You can't think that.
I mean, you're looking at the data. At this point, the goalposts have been basically everywhere in the field, and now the goalposts are basically like up in the bleacher somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. We're still looking for them. I'll let you know if I see them. Okay, so yeah. We've gone on long enough. Anything else? What do we have coming up the rest of the week? I've been so focused on this, I haven't even really paid attention to what else was coming.
Yeah, so tomorrow we'll get job cuts. So a little bit of a sneak preview into not this jobs report, but just the labor market in general. We're going to get productivity. We'll get a jobless claims, which again are crazy low. So there's been no sign there of any weakness in labor. We'll get goods orders, factory orders tomorrow.
That's what Powell's concerned about. That's what Powell's concerned about is labor.
Yeah. Right. And then most importantly, Friday we'll get the jobs report and also ISM services, which I would say carries more weight than usual just because of what's been going on. So jobs will be huge. And speaking of, we should mention as far as what people are expecting on jobs, it is 240,000. We printed 303 last time. We're expecting 240. We have basically for 2 years in a row beat to the upside pretty much almost every time. So we'll see how it goes. Unemployment rate is expected to stick at 3.8, and hourly earnings are expected to stick at 0.3, which both would be staying the same. As far as hours worked, supposed to stick at 34.4. So basically all of the just non-headline job stuff is expected to stay the same as it was last time. And we're expected to have 63,000 less jobs than we did last month. And I really honestly don't have an opinion on where any of that goes. I'm just going to let the market tell me what's up.
Have revisions come out for last month's data yet?
No, those will be released with
the new data.
With this one. And that's been kind of the same trend. Like most of the time you're getting a lot of jobs revised out. But we've had a couple months here and there where like they've actually revised them higher. And you know me, like I dig into the jobs report from like 100 different angles. Last so like all the perma bears have been pointing to the household survey because it was like really bad for a few months. And then last month it was like a monster upside print. So I'll be watching that very closely, as well as there's just kind of like an aggregate number you can look at that, that puts hours and wages and all that kind of stuff in there too. Just like a real clean one number. So I'll go look at that one to get kind of signal for the noise, and then full-time versus part-time. That's one thing that's been terrible is that. So that would be big for
household surveys has basically been just a reflection of the S&P though, hasn't it?
Oh, so the household survey for, as far as labor goes, it's more like bean counting stuff for not jobs, sure. Okay. not a sentiment like survey not type it. Thing. Got yeah. It. It's just taken differently than the establishment survey. Gotcha.
All right, pal. Well, that sums it up. I mean, it should. We put enough. I think this is the longest one or close to the longest dots we've ever done. But man, what a. Well, just I'm still trying to wrap my head.
It was
I'm
a day.
Still trying to wrap my head around this. I don't even know. And here's the other thing. I think that their purview is way too wide. The feds. I think that they have way too many mandates. And to me, it just reeks of them trying to run through a rainstorm and not get wet. And it just feels like they're flying very close to the sun. You know, I just.
Yeah, they're about to get wet or get burnt. One or the other, for sure. Because I think you're right.
The arrogance of the fact that they think they can do this is just, it is just incredible to me. Yeah, I don't really know. Outside of those points, I don't know. I'm still blown away by that. Anyway, so what I would say though, and I don't know if you echo the sentiment, but what I would say is this does nothing to change our defensive posture here, especially with the market action today. I don't think it told us anything one way or the other. I don't know how you feel about it, but today does not change my outlook short term at all.
Yeah, I mean, nothing really happened today. Even in markets, like you're kind of on most markets, you're where you've been over the last week. Like nothing broke out or broke down or anything. Like it's everything's in the range it's been in the last week or two.
All right, pal. Well. That'll do it for today. We, as always, guys, we'll be back again tomorrow. Hope you keep taking this journey with us. wish I could tell you what to expect tomorrow. This was kind of a religion. Well, it's not like I've ever listened to the Fed with, you know, or taken them that serious. I mean, most people listen to this know I've not exactly been a Fed cheerleader. But boy, this just muddies the waters. What a setup. So we'll keep walking through it day by day. Hopefully you take this trip with us, and hopefully you're finding it as wild and as crazy as we are. So until tomorrow, we'll see you then. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
The opinions expressed in this program are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Trek Financial, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor.